Jones returning it. Here's Waller. And the ball's on the ground. Keeping it. The set. To the end zone. The rookie takes it home for the touchdown. Jennings intercepted as Collins has the football for New England. Blunt breaking it inside the 20. And all the way home for the touchdown.
Jacoby Brissett, not Jake Brissett, getting it done for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots and the throne of ease in a 27-0 Patriots victory over the Texans. I'm Greg Rosenthal. I'm here with Chris Wesseling. We're going to talk about the Thursday night game before previewing all the Week 3 games with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler in a bit. Wes, watching this, I felt like this is one of those games I will remember as a Bill Belichickophile, as one of his signature games as a coach.
Absolutely, and I think for all of the back padding for Bill Belichick over the past 3 weeks, Josh McDaniels deserves as much love. Taking two disparate skill sets like Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett and concocting game plans, this time on 3 days, to highlight Brissett's strengths, hide his weaknesses, against a defense that was in the running for best other than the Broncos.
Right. I think the complexity that they came to this game with in terms of the running game was special. I mean, there's an end around with Martellus Bennett. There's all sorts of different variations of fly sweeps. There's some counter option stuff straight out of a Navy playbook. Someone on Twitter pointed out they lined up in a single T formation for a couple steps, and they're putting all this into the game plan on just a couple days. And while some coaches, they kind of have their system and they're going to do their system, it's like the Patriots look at what they have and they figure out the best way to use their players.
I know it's one of your favorite canards that there are only 5 or 6 coaches in the NFL that really matter to the good and the bad, and the rest of the league is in the middle. It's fun to see coaching with a vision, a plan, and a mode of attack versus a lot of coaches that are vanilla from game to game, and you know what you're going to get.
Right, and when I think of the Patriots, I think how complementary they are in terms of the football they play. It's like you watch the Saints or the Dolphins, it's like their defense will have a great game when their offense isn't very good, or vice versa. And part of the reason Belichick deserves credit here is, you know, their defense comes out today and they pitch a shutout. And Jacoby Brissett did great. Ultimately, he only had to throw for 100 and something yards, and they got to sit on the ball a little bit in the second half because the defense didn't give up a point.
Well, the Texans fell right into the Patriots' trap. They came out in a cover two daring Osweiler to throw deep, or basically daring them to run because they're taking the deep ball away.
Right.
And then the Texans responded with a hyper-conservative game plan that included several runs on third and long where they just didn't seem to trust Osweiler not to throw the ball up for grabs.
They had to give up third and 20, and the game was over at that point. But to watch them give up and run the ball.
They had a third and 8 in the first quarter. They had a third and 5 along the way.
Well, I think Osweiler was a little scrambled by what he was seeing. They're a team that usually gets crazy, and I don't think they really got crazy on defense in this game. But he wasn't willing to go down the field. Then he did try to jam one in, and my boy Jamie Collins makes a big interception. Collins has been incredible the last couple games.
Well, we both mentioned that when he came in, he was as athletic and dynamic as any linebacker you'll see. He's doing backward handsprings. Now he's jacked. He's much bigger physically and tougher and cleans up the run game better.
And they're fast. And I don't think this means that Osweiler's a bad quarterback. You know, he does have more interceptions.
He's got 6 interceptions in his last 4 games going back to last year. He's clearly got a long delivery, and he's slow to process in the pocket. I think those are things that are going to stay with him.
He has more interceptions this year than touchdown drives. You know, they only have 3 touchdowns on offense right now.
And they have too much talent. The offensive line has been a problem. They don't open holes for Lamar Miller. And Will Fuller, for as much of a playmaker as he is, every week he drops a pass.
He does. Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler both had great games. The Patriots are faster on defense. Chris Long's been a good pickup. That's all great. But I still take a step back, and I know, you know, look, Mark and Dan, they're sending tweets out, they're sending texts, they're sending messages on our instant messenger client, which will not be named, And they're trying to make me, I don't know, it's almost like they want me to feel guilty or bad about enjoying this Patriots team.
It's been a three-pronged attack from Mark Sessler in the last half an hour. Twitter, text, and our inter-office messaging client, which has these three lines. Write your pretty articles about the Patriots. What a joke. Gonna fly on white wine. Nothing left for clowns who follow lesser teams.
Love Mark. But you know what? I'm not gonna not enjoy this. And that might sound like a Throne of Ease type statement, but you know what would be even more insulting on the Throne of Ease? To not appreciate what's going on here with Bill Belichick and this team. Not just early this season, this has been one of the more fun things to watch. But just in general, that you're watching, you know, they were joking on NFL Network they should rename, you know, the Lombardi Trophy the Belichick Trophy. That's a joke. But as someone that loves football, and of course I'm wildly lucky it's my team, this is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, coaches of all time. And he's in the middle of this run, and he just keeps topping himself. And every time you think they've got a little too much against him, they do something like drop 27-0 on a 2-0 team. And if you can't enjoy that, then you can't enjoy football.
Well, he was already regarded as the greatest coach in the 21st century. But you have to it occurred to me that Tom Brady's suspension is the best thing to happen to Bill Belichick's legacy.
Mm.
There's a new round of, like, recognition of how great he is over the past 3 weeks.
It also got me thinking about, you know, someday Tom Brady will retire. And I don't know if Bill Belichick will retire then, but, you know, it makes you think, obviously Tom Brady is maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, but, you know, you're not going to count out Bill Belichick from doing some special things after Tom Brady's gone. Why would you?
No, and I really believe you have to emphasize Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. This is an entire coaching staff really putting it together. And McDaniels has been brilliant.
He's gone. He's going to be coaching another team next year. We're gone, too, because we got to talk about some Week 3 games other than this 27-0 shellacking. So let's send it over to Dan Hansis to the tune of my favorite song.
The Around the NFL Podcast.
Own 0 square feet of real estate.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
By the way.
It's true. We're all renters.
Yeah.
Well, we live in L.A. We'll never own anything.
That's something to be proud of.
Look at this by Wes. We talked about his shirt on the last show. Another autumnal, very season-like production by you.
I dress shirt. He dresses to the seasons. That's it. Bottom line, it's been decided.
Doesn't everyone?
There are no seasons here. No, I don't. I wear the
Greg,
same
the,
things all year round.
Greg, the season contrarian.
I'm just saying. Saying we wear the same stuff all year round.
Huh. What you just heard at the top of the show was the recap by Wes and Greg Rosenthal, the scientists of the Houston-New England game, where they got an up-close look at Mr. Jake Brisket.
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
Oh, my.
Can we go now? Is that it? Can we
that's enough. Four John, please.
So, there's that game. But there are a lot to talk about. We've already reached now week 3. Isn't it funny how things just start flying once the season gets going? We have, again, 32 teams, 16 games, one already played. That means 15 games. That means 30 teams to talk about.
Wow.
Yes. So we'll go through all the Sunday games and, of course, the Monday night game. Oh, my God, there's another primetime game with the Bears involved.
It was a disastrous.
Give the people what they want.
It was a disastrous thought by the NFL schedule makers.
Is it too late to flex out of that? Can we do something as a society to stop the Bears from playing in front of Al, Chris, and the world?
Well, from a personal angle, you could just skip it entirely. What's forcing you to watch it?
I'm thinking about quitting my job.
Well, we're here. We have to tape a podcast right afterwards talking about that game. So
not all of us.
So a lot to get to. We're going to go through all the games. We're going to touch in on the team of ATL. We're going to talk about our locks of the week. So much stuff to get to. So why don't we dig right in, gentlemen, and start with the games at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And the first one up, speaking of the team of ATL. A lot of people threw this out there as a possibility to be kind of like a loser goes home type match in the team of ATL.
Feels like that.
The Oakland Raiders heading to Nashville to face the Tennessee Titans. The Raiders, who, of course, the old Zeuser had nominated, the Titans, who Wes nominated. And as we said, and wait, let me just take a second here. I want to apologize to both everyone in this room and the listeners. I don't want to be the reason why the team of ATL goes away. I want to keep this together. And, Mark, what I want to ask of you, now okay. I know you're going to support the Vikings no matter what this season.
Correct.
But can we at least for the sake of unity here, can you use the Vikings as your official entrant for the team of ATL nominations?
So that it's just rejected by the three of you?
No. I didn't. There's no. We're not going to vote until after the third week of games.
You don't know.
And even if
I mean, it's received more support publicly than the Buccaneers, and I'm sticking with them.
Listen, in the sake of being cooperative, I will consider it.
Okay. I mean, okay. Because I don't want – there are a lot of people that like the team of ATL. And what can happen, even if the Vikings don't get it, Mark,
yeah,
they could be your team. Because all this – and we'll get to it. All the stuff going on with the Browns, you deserve to have a secondary team this year more than anybody. But just to have some structure involved, would you mind just subbing in for the Bengals, the Vikings?
Yes, I'll consider it. I think one thing that's happening is that Greg has removed so many segments from the show that I don't want another one to float away. So there is some pull there. I do care about the listeners.
That's fair, Greg. Can you stop removing?
You were the two trying to kill the segment last time. No,
you pointing fingers. I just said I came to the group just now and I said I'm sorry. I want to make this
I'm
work.
I'm all for continuing the process.
Don't worry, we've got lock of the week. All other segments can fade away.
Oh,
that's another thing. We'll get to that.
We're gonna
too.
Have to get into that.
It's getting more and more difficult to deal with the personalities of the podcast. I think this could be the beginning of the end. But we're going to soldier on at least to the 2016 season. And let's get back now to Oakland at Tennessee. And 2-1-1 teams, two teams with problems. The Oakland Raiders, Mark, can't stop anybody on defense. And the Tennessee Titans, well, they're lucky to have a win because they haven't looked very good at all.
Well, maybe this is a get-well game for Tennessee. You're at home. And I know, Chris, that for you, the Titans – you weren't too excited about him last week, but you know, this is
the bloom is off the road.
Young group, though. Teams do not get formed in 1 or 2 weeks in the NFL, and I am urging you to not give up on them as your
right.
candidate for team of ATL, because this, coming out of Sunday, if they have a win and they're 2-1, look, the Titans still have work to do, but I think this can still be a fun offense.
My biggest issue with the Tennessee Titans through two games is that Mike Mularkey took all the fun out of Marcus Mariota's game.
Do they miss Ken Whisenhunt? I know that seems weird to think, but Ken Whisenhunt's out doing a nice job with San Diego right now. Marcus Mariota looks
called the Peter Principle.
Looks slow to me in terms of his decision making. Now maybe that's because he has all these new wide receivers, but he's taken a long time to decide who he's going to throw to. And when you are taking that long and you don't go deep down the field, that's tough to overcome.
Well, he went deep down the field one time to Delanie Walker for a 30-yard touchdown, but that's not nearly enough. You're right.
Also was intercepted on a deep throw.
Yes.
He's tried. He did finish last game out well, 9 for 9 and two clutch drives to win a game.
Can't they look at, all right, how did we run our offense when we finally got going? I know Mularkey's not, Bill Belichick back there, but it can't be that complicated. What's been working? What's not working? Now let's move on to week 3 and get things going here. There's enough talent and a potentially dynamic game-changing quarterback. Let's figure this out, guys.
Here's what worked. Injure all of the Lions' defensive players, then go 9 for 9.
Wow, you're down on the Titans, huh?
They don't deserve much love for that game. Great. They had a good game-winning drive.
Could Wes should allow it to have a different team of ATL.
Do you want to pull the Titans out of consideration?
That's what I was going to ask.
I kind of like the loser-goes-home match. But
I like the loser-goes-home match, and I feel like this room is not taking the Texans seriously as team of ATL. Hmm.
All right, we will get to the Texans. So there's Oakland at Tennessee, a game to watch between two teams who a lot of hype going into the season. Let's see. Someone's going to be 1-2 in a bad spot heading into week 4. Moving on, gentlemen, the Minnesota Vikings. There are teams in bad spots, and there are teams in good spots. The Vikings in a very good spot, at least record-wise, now 2-0 after a very impressive win over the Packers on Sunday Night Football. But, of course, got terrible news on Wednesday when it became official that Adrian Peterson's knee injury, which at first there was some reports, and it's always annoying when injuries are reported this way. It's like, oh, it's a torn meniscus. Actually, good news. It's like nobody knows what they're talking about. Because what actually happened was they weren't shaving the meniscus. They have to repair the thing. There's a bucket tear involved. There's an LCL involved. He jacked up his knee bad, so he is out, what they say, is 4 to 6 months, and we know his ability to heal. But at the same time, you have to think there's a chance we've seen the last of Adrian Peterson in 2016 and maybe with the Vikings in general. So now, without Teddy Bridgewater, without Adrian Peterson, they head to Charlotte to face the Panthers, 1-1. They put their week one loss behind them, got healthy, and a blowout win in week two. And now here we are, Greg Rosenthal. The Panthers, to me, again, are in a very good spot here at home. I don't know if I'll pick against them once at home this season. I haven't looked at their schedule, but I just think that they're very tough to beat, and that offense looks close to unstoppable.
They do, but they started the game slow against San Francisco, and this is easily their toughest matchup. Well, that's not true. They played Denver in week one. But this is a very tough matchup in the NFC by a defense that we think is good enough to win these types of games. So I'm not counting out the Vikings in any game this year.
But if you're the Vikings, this lines up as a pure acid test because you're on the road against one of the best home teams around. And you want to talk about – it's what we talked about on Tuesday with the Panthers. The matchup issue when you've got Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, Greg Olsen, and a decent running game, no matter who's in there it seems – this is going to test Minnesota's Mike Zimmer-led defense from start to finish.
Well, I think it's an acid test to see if they are emerging as an NFC superpower or if they're still in that might be a wild card, might finish a close race in their division, but maybe not can't hang with the best teams in that conference.
Well, it's early for them, and they have some big problems. I mean, they just lost not only Adrian Peterson, they lost Matt Khalil, who was not playing well, but he was still your starting left tackle. Their offensive line was terrible against Green Bay. They won a game where Sam Bradford got knocked around, where Adrian Peterson left the game and it wasn't running well anyway. So this is a team that they can't survive. They can't expect Sam Bradford to be that good, anticipate throws, and survive a bad offensive line.
And that's what happened to him last year. They lost one lineman after the next.
Well, we heard that this is a mauling group. Well, you know, they're kind of built to maul people. Well, where's the running game right now? It hasn't been there for Peterson. Jerick McKinnon's going to start. He's a better player on third down than Peterson at this point. Asiata's in there.
They signed Ronnie Hillman.
I'm not really that worried about the backfield. I'm more worried about
Greg Rosenthal, colon, where's the mauling?
Greg Rosenthal,
more mauling, please.
Adrian Peterson,
no.
Not the best running back.
No, I'm not saying that. On third downs, they've said it with their play calls. In general, they believe McKinnon's a better player on third
downs. Adrian Peterson called McKinnon a physical freak. I mean, we have to see that happen.
Xavier Rhodes might return for this game. So you mentioned matching up. There's a physical cornerback that could maybe match up with those Panthers receivers.
Mark, the Vikings are maybe potentially your team of ATL entry. Do you see them coming out of this game 3-0?
Well, I'm going to say yes because I fully
Look
believe in this team. It's time for
the hang those onions, Cecil.
Listen, why not? I mean, I'm typically wrong on every pick that I make, so it doesn't mean anything to the team, but I'll say yes. Go win it.
Everson Griffin getting after it. They're all getting after it. Why not?
All right, guys, let's move on now. And we were just talking about the Denver Broncos earlier. We mentioned them, and now they are 2-0 as well. They head to Cincinnati. This is, to me, one of the games I like most about this week. The Broncos at the Bengals, who are 1-1, a tough loss against the Steelers in a game that's always a battle. And now they got Denver, so that's quite a 1-2 punch. Chris Wessling, what were your thoughts and your takeaways out of Cincinnati's performance against Pittsburgh?
Two takeaways. They are 5-6 in their last 11 games since starting 8-0 last year. Are we sure they're still one of the AFC's best team? That's takeaway number one. Number two, their offensive line didn't get as much attention as Dallas's last season, but they were as rock solid as any offensive line in the NFL. They have allowed the most sacks in the league this year through two games, and they have not rushed for more than 60 yards in a game in either games, which that's only happened once in the last 2 years before this season.
Wow.
So is the offensive line an issue? And if it is, this is the defensive line to take advantage of it.
Right. Derek Wolfe having a big game. Shane Ray had a big game last week. You're right. They did not look the same. If you think about that Jets game, for a Bengals offensive line to get dominated that much is not something we saw all of last
year. This is a team that spent high draft picks on multiple linemen last year. And part of that 5-6 record is attached to A.J. McCarron in the lineup. But it's fair to ask because every season it seems like coaches and players are pulled from the Bengals and they keep it going. At some point, that's going to start to cost you. And maybe we're starting to see it now.
I think you're making all good points about Cincinnati. I still think they're a really good team, and I think they're gonna hold court against the Broncos. I think Denver's due for a loss. I think Trevor Siemian's gonna struggle big time on the road in Cincinnati, and I think that's gonna be the key to the game. I'm so confident, in fact.
Oh,
Wes,
wow.
Listen up. I will make the Bengals my Week 2 lock of the week. Bengals winning some football games on Sunday.
Multiple games.
Well,
okay.
One.
What led you to this conclusion?
I just said. I just explained it to you. I like the. I think they're better than maybe the rest of the room right now, even though they have not played too well to start the season. And I don't think Trevor Siemian's going to play well in this spot, and that's going to be the difference.
Well, it's Denver's first road game, and I think that's something that's notable. It's the Bengals' first home game, so that you know they went 1-1 ultimately with a tough 2-game road trip or whatever you want to call it to start the season. Teams do play. I want to see Trevor Siemian in a game where he faces a little more pressure. That last game against Indianapolis, as Wes said on Sunday night, you can sort of throw it out for him. He didn't do poorly, but he barely had to do anything. He didn't face any pass rush whatsoever against Indianapolis. So this is a bigger test for the Denver offense going on the road against what should be a pretty good Bengals defense.
That's my prediction. This is the Trevor Siemian comes down to earth game. Doesn't mean they're in trouble, but, you know, 2-1 after 3 weeks, they're okay.
Where was he before? Up in the skies, in your mind?
I think in the public opinion, they have solved their issue. They have this workman-like QB, and he still might be. He's shown a lot of good things in 2 weeks, but I think it's going to be a tough week for him.
And they're going to be missing some key players. Donald Stevenson, the right tackle, when he went out of that game last week, it hurt him. He's not expected to play. Virgil Green, who's kind of been a find at tight end, he's not expected to play. They're going to have to roll out Jeff Hermann. I don't think he's played a snap for them since he was drafted in the third round last year, so they don't really have a tight end.
Beijing, Mr. Herman, you have a phone call at the front desk.
I believe it's Jeff Hierman.
Hierman?
Oof.
Paging Mr. Hierman, you have a phone call at the front desk.
Moving.
Can't be blamed for not knowing his name because he's injured 100%.
He has literally never played a single snap.
And the
Broncos defense, they're crazy how many defensive backs they played. Six of them played 40 snaps last week.
Yeah, but if you're a PA announcer and you say that you did, it's not your fault, but in that actual building, that PA announcer, that's a public gaffe. You'd be, you know, points taken away on you.
Am I alone on an island here with the Cincinnati pick? Just curious.
This was my team of ATL a couple, you know, weeks ago before I found a real team.
I would not make them my lock of the week.
Have a chance.
But I would take the Bengals in a tight one.
I'm going Denver.
I'll take the Bengals at home.
Okay. Moving on, the Detroit Lions with Jim Bob Cooter at offensive coordinator. By the way, you know, talked about it. We've talked about it, and I've shared this guy with you guys privately, but also I've said it into a mic, so it's pretty public. I like this Cooter, and I'm not alone.
Cooter for president.
Because there is a meme growing out of the Detroit area and the surrounding communities, Jim Bob Cooter for president. You're seeing it on the back of vans. You're seeing it on T-shirts. Terrell Austin, their defensive coordinator, ended a press conference on Thursday by saying Jim Bob for president. Cooter was asked about it during his press conference. Jim Caldwell said today when asked about it, well, he definitely win the southern states, which actually checks out.
Jim Caldwell made it funny. You know Cooter's doing something right when he makes Caldwell funny.
He would immediately become the best presidential candidate.
West goes political.
But actually, you want to hear, you know, if you want to be serious about it, the Cooter, he's only 32 years old, eligible to be a president until the 2020
election. Well, he needs to accrue more knowledge about our nation.
Got to be at least 35-year-old, overseas listeners. To be the president. Anyway, so the Lions are 1-1. They're a fun 1-1. Everybody's excited. Amir Abdullah out for the year to IR with a foot injury, which sucks. We don't know if we're going to see him again, but so they're missing that running back, and it was a playmaker. But they still have Matthew Stafford and a high-octane passing game. They head to Green Bay, Greg Rosenthal, to face the Packers, who have not been themselves. And the number, this is the stat of the week that everyone is saying over and over again. Aaron Rodgers, the best quarterback on the planet, or so we think, has not had a 100 passing rating game in 14 games.
I thought you were going to trot out the – I've seen as a meme a lot of Aaron Rodgers versus Blaine Gabbert over the last 16 games or 10 games, and they're
you guys are like you know official meme ombudsman this week.
Oh, you know what? That's all gonna come crashing down this week because if the Packers can't get healthy at home against this lousy Lions defense, who's missing a ton of players, it's never gonna happen. But the Packers players
lock it up, Greg.
I could, but it's not an option. They're too easy of a pick this week. The Lions haven't had Ziggy Ansah at practice. They missed him all of last week. DeAndre Levy, who knows if he's going to play again. They've got some depth issues at linebacker. They're trotting out guys like Kyle Van Noy, who hasn't really played for them. Wallace Gilberry playing starter snaps. Copeland.
Kerry Hyder.
Tavon Wilson, who was like the eighth safety for the Patriots, is now playing starter snaps. This is a talent-poor defense that I think they coach up pretty well with Terrell Austin, but the Packers players are just so much better. They should get healthy.
It's a shame for the Lions because after the first week, they look like a team that could be kind of frisky this year. And then, like you say, you lose Ansah and Levy. They're two best players.
And they don't have a lot of guys. You mentioned Kerry Hyder, who we've kind of enjoyed watching, an undrafted rookie who's played about as well as any defensive player in the snaps that he's played. I think they still could be fun to watch, though, because Marvin Jones and I think Matthew Stafford's played two really good games. I know it didn't quite show up in the stats last week, but I think he's looking good this week.
Well, you mentioned Rodgers and his numbers, and everyone's talking about this all week long, but it has a lot to do, as we've talked about for over a season, with what's been around him on offense. I'm not ready with this Aaron Rodgers is no long. He's overrated at this point. Give me a break.
Wait, can I just say something? Because I read a piece in on the Ringer, Danny Kelly, I believe it was, where he made that same point, this idea that Rodgers has had his weapon stripped away. And I get it. Maybe it's not as good offense as it was in 2011, when the MVP, or a couple of years ago when he won it again. But there's still weapons on this team. I mean, Jordy Nelson, even if not 100%, is a guy that a lot of teams would love to have. Randall Cobb is a guy a lot of teams would love to have. The Eddie Lacy, even if we don't think he's fully Eddie Lacy. There are weapons here and an offensive line that can block. I mean, we're almost letting him off the hook a little bit.
I think we are. The offensive line has played great this year. I think we're letting Mike McCarthy off the hook, and that has been a popular topic in Green Bay this week. They had four straight drives last week where they didn't change the personnel once. Not the formations, the personnel. Everything is lining up the same. They basically run out the same exact guys for 70%+ of their snaps, the same exact formation, the same exact lineup, and it's like they've been running that offense for too long, and you always got to evolve. And I think there's a question of whether that Mike McCarthy offense.
So you think teams are legitimately, from a strategy angle, catching up or have caught up to the Packers?
Well, he's averaged 6.5 yards per attempt for the last year, so yes.
Everyone's looking for an explanation.
They run an isolation route offense, which means the receivers are isolated against defensive backs, and the receivers can't win those battles because they don't separate.
Let's move on, gentlemen. The Baltimore Ravens are 2-0. You can argue they're the worst 2-0 team right now. They got by the Bills at home in week one and then basically stole one from the Browns. You give them credit for coming back from 20-0, but still, they're very lucky to be undefeated at this point. And they head to Jacksonville, Mark. And I'll tell you what, the Jaguars, their season's on the line here. They're in their building against a 2-0 team that's really 2-0, but not a powerhouse in this league. You better win this game, Mark. The Jags cannot fall flat for a third straight week.
Well, you know, I think what we've talked about with the Jaguars all along is that this extra season that this regime got was based on the idea of it is time to, you know, turn on the engine and show. Caldwell has drafted very good players. Players with a lot of potential. It falls on
Gus. That's what we hear.
That's what we're hearing. I'm just saying it falls on Gus Bradley to go out and produce a game where the coach obviously had a massively positive impact. And I don't have a problem with Baltimore winning some ugly games early in the year, but Jacksonville absolutely needs to take this thing. And it's like even be show some of the elements that you were last season. The offense last week, totally Allen Robinson taken out of that game. What happened to the Allen Robinson that we saw even during the preseason? He's got to show up against Baltimore's defense. And if you look at what Cleveland did, and I realize that was a Class A ridiculous loss for the Browns. But for a period of time, and even late in the game when Josh McCown was hurt, he was still picking up big chunks of real estate, throwing the ball downfield. That's what the Jaguars like to do. So I think this is maybe a good matchup for the Jaguars to get back on track.
Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules.
Whatever, lady.
Eric Weddle has played well. Sharice Wright has played really well in run support. But you're right. The Browns, Corey Coleman got healthy against the Ravens defensive backs. And Allen Robinson, who has not played well this year, he's also played a couple of good cornerbacks. But he's got to get healthy against Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, he didn't seem like in week one, I thought he was particularly different than normal. But talking about the importance of this game, Dan, you know, one of their beat writers thought this is the biggest game of this regime's tenure. Which I
totally
thought was interesting.
Get it. That makes sense.
But you think about it, not only do they need to avoid 0-3, they're going to London next week, which is supposed to be one of their home games. They do it every year.
Sure it is.
Do you want to be going there again? Now it's for the fourth or fifth straight year. You're going there 0-3. You failed to build up any excitement. And when you talked about Gus Bradley needs to make a statement, that really resonated because this is a guy last week, they were pushed around. I mean, they were dominated physically on both sides of the ball, especially on their defensive side. I mean, San Diego just mauled them. The lanes
mauled again. Huh?
That Danny Woodhead, it's a maul type of show. The lanes that Danny Woodhead and Melvin Gordon had to run through were unbelievable. And they're missing players this week. I think they're missing two of their three top cornerbacks. They're missing Kelvin Beachum. They're missing Jared Odrick. This is a banged up Jaguars team right now.
Well, you mentioned that the general manager's done a good job of acquiring talent, and Jalen Ramsey looks like the real deal.
Oh, yes.
But the other guy they drafted who was billed as a top-five talent, Miles Jack, has played 16 snaps this year over two games, so he's not even really playing.
And the one thing, and I understand the concept of more patience with the Jaguars infuriates people at this point, but you are talking about a very young defense with a lot of first- and second-year players who have played together for 120 minutes, and then there's players like Jack that have even less snaps. So it is a little bit ridiculous to ask that defense to completely mesh.
No, but you don't want to give up 31 points in three quarters to the Chargers.
I think what happened last week is the reverse of week one, where we came out saying, listen, you showed up against the Packers, and that was progress in its own right. Everything that happened in week one got dashed last Sunday.
Here's the thing. Their offense has had two pretty lackluster games. Blake Bortles missed receivers last week. His clock management and like all the intangible types of things that we talk about Carson Wentz, like you don't see that with Blake Bortles. He makes some mental errors.
Can I say the streets are talking? Streets talking about Blake Bortles now.
The other thing. What are the streets saying?
Streets are saying, what's going on with this guy? Is this guy, you know, what the Jaguars think he is? Because he's been, again, they're getting blown out early in these games.
The streets say he can only move the offense when it's garbage time.
Like,
that's what the streets are talking about.
I remember the streets doing the podcast. It sounds like the streets know what they're
streets. You know. Streets means that's the buzz out there.
People are out there talking. Also, an underrated.
Gotcha, Mark. Don't worry about it.
Streets is also a British rapper.
Right. Underrated early 2000s British rapper.
Properly right.
Remember you. You were getting crazy at the end of the first half of that Jaguars game, what the heck happened to them last week.
Yeah.
They didn't know what to do. That, to me, was Bortles in a nutshell right now, taking a sack when they absolutely couldn't take one, not being kind of aware, and then the coaching staff sort of just giving up on the half after that point.
Well, and then with time running out, you throw a pass, you know, backwards, basically, instead of ripping it downfield.
I think the Jaguars bounce back, though. Did they get a win?
They better. Jeez. Moving on. Well, speaking of geez. All right, so the Cleveland Browns are 0-2. And a quick rundown here of what's happened to the Browns in the past 15 days.
Oh boy.
Carson Wentz beat the Browns. RG3 hurt his shoulder, went to IR. Josh McCown hurt his shoulder. He's out for weeks. Carson Wentz beat the Bears. People saying he's an offensive rookie of the year favorite. Big Ben says he's surprised the Browns passed on Carson Wentz. Josh Gordon got an arrest warrant issued, although that was cleared. Corey Coleman broke his hand in practice. Carl Nassib broke his hand. Cameron Irving was raced to the hospital with a bruised lung. And yes, the Browns blew a 20-point lead in week two. I have exclusive, Mark, footage or audio reel of an official, front office official with the Browns speaking with the football gods. I mean, this is really good stuff.
Sure.
Hear it only here on the Around the NFL podcast.
Can there be a peace between us? Peace. No peace.
Oh, boy. It rages on, this metaphysical clash between Cleveland and the people upstairs.
What's going on, Mark? Where's your head at? I know it was a a tough couple days for you, and you floated away on Twitter a couple days this week, and everyone gets it.
Yeah, I feel kind of just in a weird place as a human being for multiple reasons, but the Brown situation not really helping. The only thing right now that I think that Browns fans can look at, not the only thing, but it's Hugh Jackson. We've seen so many coaches here that he came out today and he said, if you think that I'm going to let this make me panic and I'm going to go crazy and set that kind of example for the locker room, forget about it. He's like, I've been here before. I'm not going to get freaked out by injured players. And look, that's going to be tested further and further. But I do think that inside the organization, I want to think that there's a resolve to just see this through, that it's not just blow everything up after this season. And that's the hope.
Well,
he talks a good game, Hugh Jackson.
He does. Now, there's got
when some people don't
there.
Buy into,
but you're saying
the game part.
You think it might just be all talk, or
this is a guy drafts Cody Kessler, and after the draft, he says, "You've got to trust me on this one." Then we watch Carson Wentz have two very impressive games, and it looks like Cody Kessler isn't ready to play. I don't know if I trust Hugh Jackson.
Well, we're going to see Cody Kessler against the Dolphins on Sunday. And you talk about teams that are desperate. The Dolphins lost the heartbreaker to Seattle on the road in week one. And then the score doesn't look that way, but they got their doors blown off by the Pats with Garoppolo and Jake Brisket. Jake Brisket, I said. Whenever you get the chance.
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
So what are you going to do? You got to win if you're Miami. So the Browns are in a tough spot here because whenever you're on the road in week three against an 0-2 team that's not dreadful, which I don't think the Dolphins are dreadful, that's a tough hill to climb.
Well, one point, I would love Alex Fregola downstairs to just read audiobooks to me for years on end, that voice. But, yeah, we just talked about another Florida team that had a must-win scenario here in Jacksonville. But if Miami ever lost a game with Cody Kessler, who looked terrified during portions of the sideline, when they photographed him on the sideline last week. What is happening in Miami if you can't take care of the Browns?
Gloria Stefan.
They have to
chairs.
And they will.
Yeah, they need to. They're going to be without Arian Foster. Their offense needs to show something this week. You would think that their defense could mostly control Cody Kessler.
Pitbull's going to be throwing chairs.
That doesn't happen.
Pitbull, you think he's going to be an upstart problem. in the press box?
Well, he's in the front office of the Dolphins.
Who's not in the front
office? I don't think Pitbull is really in there.
Oh, really?
He just seems like he should be.
He's an area scout?
He's too busy closing out every nationally televised fireworks show.
Very busy guy.
What do the Browns are running out of reasons for hope this season. They're mowing them down one by one. Corey Coleman, to me, was reason number one, and Carl Nassib was reason number two.
Yeah. I'm not making excuses for the Browns, but for the first time in a while, it looks like you drafted two good players. So that's progress. But then if they're not on the field. The on-field thing this year, you're in Cleveland, it's almost not a, hey, let's look at the W and L each week. You're going to lose a ton of games.
That's why I think Hugh is the right guy, because I think this is a different sort of situation where it's almost like a college team that you're trying to rebuild the program, and that endless – almost, I don't know what the word, naive positivity is your best hope at getting you through the tough times and getting you to the next part.
Means nothing if you decide that Cody Kessler is the guy you'd rather have instead of Carson Wentz.
To Wes's point, they're under a ton of pressure, like we talked about earlier this week, because of every Browns loss, you've also have to, the other side of the coin is Carson Wentz destroying teams on national television. It's not a good optical look.
All right, let's move on, guys. An NFC East matchup. The Washington Redskins 0-2. The house is on fire. Jay Gruden. I don't know if Jay Gruden's going to have a job at the end of the
year.
I get a feeling if things go really
hot
ugly,
butt.
There could be, a little bit of a hot butt situation.
He just took them from worst to first last year.
I'm saying
anybody could have taken any team in the NFC East from worst to first year.
Tell that to Tom Coughlin.
I'm just saying, that ownership there, you never know. And Jay Gruden had this to say, by the way, because they're, streets talking about Kirk Cousins, of course.
Very chatty.
Keenan Robinson, a Giants linebacker who spent 4 years in Washington, said that that's what happens down there. People point fingers. And Jay Gruden said this, we're all competitors. Nobody likes to lose, so there's going to be some grumblings. I can't make 63 guys and 28 coaches happy every day. We're not all going to be smiling, singing Happy Doula or whatever the heck that song is. I think he meant
happy doula, happy doo-da day.
Zippity-doo-da.
Zippity-doo-da is probably where he was trying to go.
That doesn't sound anything like it.
I think that's what he was saying.
I think you're right, Dan. You've diagnosed that.
I Googled what he said, and there was no result.
Happy doula, happy day. Another Redskin season going down in flames.
Well, we just talked about Hugh Jackson going to take a shot if he's married to the wrong quarterback. This is the coach, and look at, he made the right choice about RG3, but he couldn't have been more pro Kirk Cousins. That was the first, you know, move of his tenure, and now you're tied to that, and I'm not sure that that's looking too good.
I don't know. He kind of buried it. He has his little ways of, yeah, I think this is just what the Grudens are like. They're going to take shots at their own players. He did it coming out of halftime a little bit about Cousins, and that's why some players get tired of playing with it. I mean, the Grudens run through quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It's kind of what they
are at the Meadowlands this week against the Giants. Now, the 0-2 week is always 0-2 against 2-0 week is always interesting to me, especially in this case where I think the Giants are a lot better than the Redskins. I think they've shown that. Their defense looks a lot better. But, you know, cosmically, the Giants could lose a game and be okay. The Redskins got some desperation going on. I could absolutely see Washington going up there and getting their first win rather than falling to 0-3. And then both teams are kind of in an okay place. I see that playing out.
I have to disagree with you, which, much to Wes's dismay, is why I made the New York Giants my lock of the week.
Whoa!
And that should concern Giants fans.
Yeah, why... You're that certain that the Redskins are going to start 0-3. Wow.
I am that certain that the Giants at home with a better team and some interesting young things happening in their wide receiving core. You know, you basically have two receivers that you didn't have last year along with Odell Beckham. Yes, they're going to win this game.
I want to see the Giants play a real defense. They haven't yet. They've probably played the two worst. If you could pick the two worst pass rushing teams in the entire NFL, that's who they've played in back-to-back weeks. And Eli Manning
comes another one
in here, but that's right. The problem. They're not playing a real defense this year.
Keep waiting
this week either.
Well, let's talk about the Giants defense because I think they're for real. When I watch game rewind, they fly to the ball. They're physical. Landon Collins is playing with authority
great.
in that back. He's controlling the line of scrimmage from the safety position. I love everything I'm seeing from the Giants.
Eli Apple looks like a nice addition. DRC has sneaky been a great free agent pickup for them for a couple years. Now he's on a better defense. What's crazy, Jonathan Casillas, bizarrely, is playing fantastic. He's a defensive captain. What's amazing and the Giants should be excited about, they haven't even rushed the passer very well yet. I would say they've been sub-average in terms of rushing the passer, but they're so tough and their secondary's been so good it hasn't mattered.
Jerry Reese is flying again as the
GM. I was going to say, Jerry Reese, who's under a lot of fire and did kind of the what a lot of times is the desperation move is where you throw a ton of money out and try to save your own job and get the team better at the same time. It's working so far, so that will be a fun game to track on Sunday, boys. Let's move on. The final 1 p.m. game, the Arizona Cardinals, who got healthy in week two, a blowout victory over, I forgot, who did they kill?
The Buccaneers.
The Bucks, right? Ooh, sorry, Greg. Didn't mean to bring up bad memories.
They're an afterthought.
I can handle
now.
It.
You have like 75 sandwiches tied into that team.
I'm all good, you know. You got to just.
Well, we're all
you
good.
You got to move past. That's what the bad teams do. They let it bother them. The Bucks have moved on.
We're going to own this loss and move on.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals now, the Bills' schedule is not easy. Everybody in the AFC has got a bad schedule. But now the Buffalo Bills in deep trouble at 0-2 and just canned their offensive coordinator for some reason, now have to fight off the Cardinals. Wes, we talk about, you know, Rex, his teams usually do better when their backs are against the wall. If there was ever a time, 0-3 and death if you lose at home, are they going to put up a fight here?
I don't know if they are, and I think – what we're going to see is there's a possibility we're going to see whatever the record is for fewest pass attempts by Rex Ryan quarterback in a game might be coming up. He said that Sammy Watkins is still up in the air. He might not play.
It sounds like he's not playing. Hasn't practiced.
So you're going to have Patrick Peterson erase Robert Woods, and then you're left to throw to Greg Salas. I don't know how the Bills are going to move the ball through the air. And they promoted a guy to offensive coordinator, Anthony Lynn, who has a pure running game background.
Mm. And they keep talking – that day where they fired Roman, Rex talked about, I want to let Tyrod show off his skills and his skill set and his special talent. And all I thought is,
Wildcat.
He wants to run the Tim Tebow offense with the Jets that he always dreamed of.
Well, and that works so well. One reason that Rex Ryan hasn't had a winning season in about half a decade. And listen, you have the Patriots coming up after this game. You're looking at 0-4, and then if you ever went to L.A. and lost to the Rams and you're 0-5, I don't want to know what that would do to Rex Ryan's tenure in Buffalo. That could be the end.
I think you'll get a good effort out of this Bills team this week.
How close are we, though, to some of the grumbling that we heard last year? I mean, this feels like this is a locker room that showed last year they couldn't keep it together.
It feels like it's November that they're firing their coordinator and making these panic moves.
Greg, they're so undermanned.
West, yeah, that too.
Would you like the answer, by the way, to the fewest pass attempts? Because it's going to be pretty hard to beat it.
Wasn't it that game 2 years ago when he wouldn't let Geno Smith throw?
Yes, Monday Night Football, December 1st, 2014. Geno Smith, a 16-13 loss. For a 4-12 Jet team, 7 of 13 for 65 yards and a pick. They ran the ball 49 times for 277 yards and lost. So, I mean, that would be pretty amazing if he approached that. But
I believe, Dan, that we watched that game at a local tavern and had to order an extra pitch or two to deal with that travesty.
I was in the office, actually. I remember that one. That was a rough one to watch.
I was definitely still at a local tavern.
You still ordered several pitchers.
I don't know where you were, Dan. Waiting for you.
You were there. All right. Anything else to say on that game, boys?
Definitely not.
The San Francisco 49ers are 1-1, and now they have to travel to Seattle, who are also 1-1. And usually I would say, oh, this will be a wipeout. But I just haven't seen enough, Mark, from the Seahawks to say that they're just going to easily take care of business until I actually see them easily take care of business.
Maybe it's just what we've seen with Seattle year after year. They do start slow occasionally, and I'm not going to press the panic button on this club. This is the team that in the preseason and throughout the summer talked about feeling that they had that same type of Super Bowl feel that they did before. And I just think they're a very resilient team under Carroll, and you're getting a San Francisco team that will not be able to hang with Seattle on Sunday.
Well, their defense... Seattle's defense looks like the best defense in the league to me. I expected them to be the best defense in the league going into the season if I had to choose one, and they've given up 19 points in 2 weeks, and
they've also played two pretty bad.
That's fair, but they're playing maybe even worse one this week. There's no reason for me to believe that Blaine Gabbert and the 49ers offense will get into double digits in terms of points, so that's why you can't be too worried.
What they need to work out is on offense.
Yeah, first of all, they have to realize that Christian Michael is running a lot better than Thomas Rawls right now.
Woke?
You need to feed Christian Michael. And Pete Carroll said this week, he looks like he's shot out of a cannon, something that we said when we saw him in the preseason. If that's the case, saddle him up, ride him.
Don't you think that the injuries in that backfield, this is probably the best thing that could happen to Michael, because I just feel like he's a flow runner. You got to give him work every quarter. You can't pull him out of the lineup and give him half the carries. He's going to thrive in this situation.
Not only the best thing for Michael, but if they let him play, it will be the best thing for the Seattle Seahawks.
And the best thing for Thomas Rawls to sit out a couple weeks.
Right.
It's not like we think Thomas Rawls is done as a quality player.
No,
he's not ready
Thomas
right
Rawls.
Now. I mean, sure. He was fantastic. And yeah, why use him in a game against the 49ers or any game really this early in the season? They're better than
that. Amen. Do they need to go out and trade for Joe Thomas?
Well, I think a trade like that is very possible.
They've shown no hesitation about giving up first-round draft picks
that's
to help
move.
Win now.
And they – yeah, ooh, I like
be
that.
Be a solid for Joe Thomas,
I mean,
too.
They can you win the Super Bowl with Gary Gilliam at left tackle?
Their tackles
Bradley
are trash.
Sowell or whatever.
We saw that line get massacred against the Rams last week. So
yeah, that's a tough draw.
Yes, it is, but you're going to face teams like that if you want to get in deep into January.
This 49ers team has played – I don't know – I guess it's the low expectations thing, but they're playing hard. I mean, you watch the Panthers game. They were competitive in that game. They've been playing hard for old Chipper.
Team and we two playing hard. Well, I expect that. I expect that. That's all.
When do you think the wheels start?
Give them a lollipop for playing hard.
It's not the most talented roster, and they're out there. They're flying around. Okay. I would have liked to seen that from the Jaguars last week. Everyone, said they're talented.
Dan not handing out lollipops.
Can't give them a lollipop. They only eat specially designed smoothies.
You too. I love you too, though, Wes.
I'm in on the smoothies.
People might be surprised to know that every morning Wes walks down the street from the office, gets a purple smoothie.
Protein.
Sucks it down.
Protein smoothie. It's delicious.
It's glorious to be around.
Moving on. The Los Angeles Rams head to Tampa Bay to face the Bucs. Two 1-1 teams. And, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to get excited about this game? I'm not going to. The Rams have 9 points the entire season. Todd Gurley, the only thing I get excited about on the Rams, can't run because his offensive line can't make holes because they can't pass, and Case Keenum's still involved. Marone, get me away from that. On the Bucs side, all right. There's a little bit of excitement, Greg. You got Jameis Winston, and you got some nice playmakers and some guys in D. But you
know
what?
Week 2 was exciting for you.
Week 2 was grotesque.
Hey, you're going to have some stinkers, but Jameis Winston has too many of them. If you look at what he did last year, he had about 5 games where he just absolutely collapsed and gave his team no chance to win. And if you're going to take that next step, like I expect him to do, you're going to have to cut that down to about, okay, you had your 1 last week, and that's it. And this matchup, to me, is tougher than the matchup against Arizona. It's similar. It's not a road game, so that helps. But this Rams front 7, they're going to get after Jameis Winston. He just has to not turn the ball over, and you should be able to beat the Rams.
Well, I think Mike Evans is going to find it a lot easier to operate against the Rams cornerbacks than he did against Patrick Peterson. And that's the matchup, because I think Mike Evans is in for a monster year.
I agree. He looks really good so far.
The weirdest story of the month to me is the Jeff Fisher contract extension that's floating around in the ether. Is it too crazy to think that they were kind of crowdsourcing that, checking the court of public opinion?
It is certainly not too crazy.
No.
You know, the fact that it's been in the news for a couple of weeks, but it has not happened yet, just seems kind of weird.
They would bother me that they would need to crowdsource
that. Oh, absolutely.
That sort of thing happens, though, with coach and GM extensions. Sometimes they don't get reported for 6 months, or you'll hear that, oh, John Schneider, by the way, that's the wrong example, but there was someone last year where you didn't even know about it for 5 months, and I bet it's done. I bet it's agreed to, whatever it is.
They're afraid to announce
it. I don't know why they won't announce it.
Greg,
announce
you know why. You know why?
They just beat the Seattle Seahawks, of our choice as the number one team in the league.
Maybe they're waiting for the Rams to score a touchdown this year.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because by the end of the year, Jeff Fisher will be the losingest coach in NFL history.
Because Tavon Austin was just given a major contract, and how many targets does
that
he have
worse
this year?
By the
21
week.
Targets for 63 yards so far. It's like they're trying to earn that money.
Here's what concerns me about the Bucs this week. You just saw what the Rams did to Seattle's ground game in the first half last week. 14 carries for 14 yards before Michael heated up a little bit in the second half. You don't have Doug Martin. Mm-hmm. And we saw that without Doug Martin last week, that Bucs offense, he is the fundamental core of that offense. And you
although
take
we
him
talk
out.
About how they have a 1-2 punch that's up
well, but
there with anybody.
The number 2 punch is not the same type of running back as Doug Martin.
Right. The number 2 punch is a passing game guy.
Right. We're hearing that Jaquizz Rodgers is going to get a lot of work.
I mean, give me a break on Jaquizz Rodgers.
Whoa. He couldn't
even make the Bears backfield, which is one of the worst in the NFL.
Jaquizz.
I didn't choose the Bucs because they're a complete roster. I chose them because they're going to be fun to watch, and they're going to withstand some adversity, like losing Doug Martin this Sunday.
They made the Cardinals fun to watch last week. Thank you, Greg.
I'm responsible.
On the San Diego Chargers, the Superchargers, are 1-1, and they are traveling now to Indianapolis. Here we are again, a desperation 0-2 team. The Colts, who absolutely have to win a game in their building. No excuse not to beat the Chargers. I'm sorry, Greg. I know you love the Chargers, and I know they're playing great through 2 weeks despite all these injuries. But the Colts, who we all – none of us picked the Colts to be bad this year, right? Nobody said the Colts are going to stink. So you got to win this
game.
Say
they were going to be good. Not one of us picked them to win the division.
I think we said they had one of the worst rosters in the NFL.
But we love Andrew Luck, and we think he could cover up blemishes. You got to win this game is what I'm saying.
Well, to you – and to the people out there in the desert and the people that think the Chargers are an underdog in this game, give me a break. They're not an underdog. Not only that, they are my lock of the week.
Oh, he put a lock on it. Wes, you got to admit the lock is fun.
To me, this
Wes doesn't want to do the lock of the week. It's fun.
These two teams aren't even.
Come back to us, Wes.
I go by what I see. And what I see with the Colts, one of the worst talented defenses in the league, and what I see from the Chargers, they're a team that is playing very good football together. I mean, they're fun to watch.
You continue to associate San Diego with the desert. I heard that the other night, too. What is going on with
here? Whoa, bro.
It's a sea-based team. They're an ocean-based team.
Talking about desert figures.
It's where Spicy lives.
Okay, a little bit of a loose connection.
It has to be.
This is a bad matchup for the Colts.
That's what I'm saying. Tough.
The Chargers are a significantly more talented team. You could take away Woodhead and Keenan Allen. They're still more talented. and their secondary on defense is their strength. Jason Verrett.
Gross.
Jason, Greg, that will be fine from you.
Stop it.
Jason Verrett, en route to an all-pro season, he's made the leap to one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. And the Colts are going to be without Dante Moncrief. They're going to have to lean awfully heavily on T.Y. Hilton and Philip Dorsett, their pint-sized wide receiver.
Right, and they have no depth after those guys. And, oh, by the way, Brandon Flowers playing pretty well. Casey Hayward with a couple picks last week.
You want to make Flowers today?
This is one of the best cornerback groups in the league. And Melvin Gordon is so much better this year, and he's got some maulers in front of him.
It's the hat trick.
Blowing open holes. This is a good offensive line. Imagine if Melvin Gordon played these two games to start his career, how would we be talking about him?
Oh, completely.
Would be saying, like, who's better, Gurley or Gordon? Did they make a mistake?
Spice Rack would be on every episode.
Well,
he looks fantastic to me because he can run over people inside, and he's got the strength to go outside.
You often find out what running backs are right away, unlike other positions. You can get a good read, and so it's kind of jarring to have had him go through his first season and see what he's doing now. He's a big play running back, and it's what they were missing last season.
And as far as Spice Rack goes, who's going to come back on the show if Melvin Gordon, and maybe when Melvin Gordon hits the 1,000-yard marker, Danny Woodhead's injury was terrible, but it almost made it a lock if Melvin Gordon just stays
healthy. Lock it up.
Right. They lost Brandon
Oliver. Is that your lock of the week, Wes?
My lock of the week.
1,000 yards.
Gordon's got to stay healthy, but you're right. Like, they're going to have to figure out. They didn't really use him when they were in shotgun. They're going to have to figure that out. I mean, because he's not going to leave the field that much.
One quick thing, Dan.
McCluster.
I can't believe you guys are so wrong about this, by the way.
Well, hold on. Here's what we are right about.
I
don't think that we've had the Colts buried as a team, but not anyone in this room thinks that they've been put together well.
You're right.
I got killed on Twitter for saying that the team had regressed under Ryan Grigson. That is exactly what they've done.
Well, the Colts, their recipe, it wouldn't be a shock if they won. And the recipe is Andrew Luck starts playing like an MVP,
exactly,
which we thought he might be before last season.
Give him some help, though.
You got to. But last week, and he admitted this, he played poorly last week. People want to blame it on the teammates. He missed a lot of throws early in the game that were there when he was protected. So he's got to light it up on this lousy roster.
Next game, we're going to Arrowhead, where my New York Jets at 1-1 face the Chiefs, also 1-1, and we talked about desert figures. I feel like this game is pretty close to a toss-up. I think the Chiefs, most people will pick the Chiefs to be the favorite here because of the home field. But I don't know. I thought Alex Smith did not look very good last week, and I think the Jets' defense, the biggest problem for the Jets so far is they're giving up these big chunk plays, and I think that's correctable. I think once Revis figures out what's going on with him, he's not the same guy anymore, but they're going to figure out how to use him the right way. They'll sort those things out. I trust Todd Bowles to do it. That's been the only problem for the Jets for me through 2 weeks. So I think they're going to be competitive with just about everyone this season, including in Arrowhead in a tough environment.
Jets are a good team. The Chiefs last week could not overcome the fact that they turned the ball over 3 times. You can't do that against the Texans defense, and you certainly can't do it against the Jets, because the Jets offense, I was not on Ryan Fitzpatrick's bandwagon at all last season, but I think he's looked good this year.
He looked good on last Thursday, I'll say that.
The Texans are going to make every quarterback they play at home look bad.
Yeah, Alex Smith had a bad game. Jets, to me, look like a better team than they were a year ago. I think through 2 weeks they've been one of the best teams in the league, even though they lost the first game.
Tough game.
I think a tough game that they dominated and should have won. They've looked good, Danny. Don't ever say we don't say something nice about
them. No, I appreciate that you guys have noticed, because they had. I'm still angry that they blew that week one game, because they should be 2-0, and this is. And as I said, they have 6 games that are killer games to start the season. Got to get out of it 3-3, and this is a winnable game. I will not be satisfied by them playing the Chiefs tight. I think they're a playoff team, which means go win this game.
Your boy, Quincy Anunua.
Is he good or what?
Like he's good. What is he, an H-back?
No one knows what he
is. What's Brandon Marshall at this point?
Well, Marshall said this week he's got to get back on the field, because if he doesn't, little Quincy will take his job.
I have Marshall on my fantasy team. Decide to pick up Anunua as almost like put them together. If one's gone, the other's going to go crazy.
This is how much the Jets talked Anunua up all through the preseason. A lot of times when these things happen with any team, that it's not the real deal. But everyone was saying, watch out for this guy. He's going to be a difference maker. They have plays in an offense that includes Matt Forte, Brandon Marshall, and Eric Decker, they have a lot of plays that are built around Quincy Nunua. That's how much they believe in him and his ability, and he leads the team in receiving through 2 weeks.
And
so,
I'm not sure this Chiefs defense is that tough a matchup right now.
It's not last year's defense down the stretch.
They haven't rushed the passer.
And I don't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to play like he did last week, every week, because he played like Joe Namath.
He'd be the MVP of the league if he did
that
every week.
But, again, the reason why Fitzpatrick could have another good season is because he's a great match with Chan Gailey, and he's got weapons. He's got guys to play with, and you throw Inunua in there, this Jets team is going to score some points.
You are right. They need this, though, because you've got the Seahawks, the Steelers, the Cardinals, and the Ravens coming up as your next month of action.
Yep. This is a big week. This is a big game for the Jets.
Guy to watch in this game or the rest of the year, Tyreek Hill of the Chiefs. This guy might be the next great return man in the NFL. He is fun to watch.
Dante Hall-like.
We'll have to get Keith Hansis on the phone, too, on Sunday and see what he has to say about one of the key games of the season for Gangrene. Moving on, the final 4 p.m. game is a good one. Two undefeated teams. Is this the one of only two 2-0 matchups this week? Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. And here you go, Wes. This is exciting because Carson Wentz has all the looks right now of a quarterback who the Eagles have hit on. But now he gets a real challenge. Not that the Steelers are the steel curtain anymore or anything like that, but this is a real team where he's going to have to score some points to keep pace. Carson Wentz, big challenge here. Let's see how good this guy really is.
This is the litmus test game of the week.
Is that sponsored by anyone?
Sounds like a column.
The litmus test game of the week sponsored by
Dr. Scholes.
Mr. Flames chemistry class.
Dr. Scholes.
Well, Carson Wentz got to face the Browns and Bears. Two terrible secondaries.
Hey.
Two bad teams. And now now they face a team that is being ranked by a lot of people number one on power rankings, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have played pretty good defense. Kirk Cousins and Andy Dalton have posted some empty numbers against them. Mm-hmm. But they have been tough, not only shutting down ground games, but forcing quarterbacks into mistakes.
And they've done it without much of a pass rush. I could be wrong. I think they have one sack this year. As a team, and they're playing Jarvis Jones and James Harrison backing into coverage. They've got their two young rookies in the secondary, both played a lot last week, including their first round pick. It's kind of a conservative defense, and that's the type of thing that could make a rookie make some mistakes. You know, just have a lot of guys in coverage and just force him to be really patient and not force the ball in there.
I love this year's Eagles team, which is the exact opposite of what we saw under Chip Kelly, generating points. Making the most of their opportunities when they get in the red zone too. But their defense, which I like the Eagles defense, but they have, talk about not facing a test. You've played the Browns offense before. They kind of got on track for a few minutes against the Ravens. That was a terrible game. And then last week, the Bears offense, just a big stink joint. So I'm sorry. I mean, this is a test. You're getting Big Ben. You're getting Antonio Brown. Carson Wentz is going to have to work to keep up the pace in this game.
Well, see, those Eagles cornerbacks on paper don't look like they're great players, and this will be a big test for Jim Schwartz, who's become one of the better coordinators in the league in general.
Yep, he's always been able to do that. And I wish this game was the Sunday night game. Is it too late?
Can we just get the flex going anytime we want? Get wild.
Roger, if you're listening to the show, which I don't imagine you are, but if one of your minions are, please let Roger know that we want this to be the Sunday night game and not the next game we're going to talk about. Actually, you know what I want to ask? Who wins this game? Pittsburgh at Philly, around the horn. Mark Sessler.
Going Steelers.
Steelers.
I'm going to go Eagles. Why not? Home team.
The
NFC East pick.
I'll go Eagles too. We split. All right.
Greg loves the link.
Sunday night football, ladies and gentlemen, the Chicago Bears at the Dallas Cowboys. And the Bears are 0-2 and a boring 0-2. Somehow have back-to-back primetime games. But this is a good spot for the Cowboys, Mark Sessler, who 1 point loss in week one, and then they eked one out in week two to get even. And now they get a chance to get to 2-1 against a Chicago team that seems like a total mess right now.
It's a great spot. I think any team in the league would want to play the Bears right now. The Bears right now are a disorganized, identity-free mess. And so, at home, we're Dallas, where I want to see Ezekiel Elliott, who essentially was benched last week for a pair of fumbles. this could be the game where Ezekiel Elliott, you want something to like about Sunday Night Football? We're going to get a good shot to see him chalk up some yardage in this game.
You should watch Sunday Night Football. I'm going to quit my job, walk down Washington Boulevard, and keep walking into the ocean if I have to watch Bears play on national
TV. That sounds attractive, too. I can't sell this game from a Bears angle.
How about Dak Prescott in a national Cowboys game? It almost, I wouldn't say he's under the radar because he's the Cowboys quarterback, but a rookie fourth-round quarterback looking as composed and error-free and some fancy-looking plays last week against the Redskins, I mean, they got to be pretty excited.
How about a little fantasy nightmare for people out there regarding the Cowboys offense? A possible running back committee between Ezekiel Elliott and Alfred Morris. Could happen, folks.
It's realistic if he struggles early.
They're saying that he's rushing his runs, essentially. He's not being patient enough, that he was just kind of running in there, not waiting for the hole to develop. But for all the talk about the Cowboys offensive line, it's like they haven't had two good games. In particular,
that's fair, dog.
I mean, they haven't played pretty well. They start off the game well, dictating in both of these weeks, which is a good sign for a team run by a rookie quarterback, and then it kind of goes away.
Well, they do still have the best left tackle in football.
Yeah.
He's
played well.
Moving on to Monday Night Football, gentlemen, a showdown in the NFC South. This used to be, you know, around 2010 mark, like our early tenure at NFL.com. This is one of the matchups of the season, at least, and then the playoffs, some great playoff games.
In your eyes.
Now, what? Atlanta at New Orleans. Shootouts.
Talking about a couple of dome teams that, in my world, this matchup, this is a Greg Rosenthal special. Take it away, Greg.
Okay. All right. Let me try this again. I don't know where that went. But anyway, the Falcons, 1-1. Matt Ryan looking like he's in a full-on rejuvenation season mode right now, travels to the Superdome to face the Saints. What is that a wrong statement that Matt Ryan has looked really good through 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think he's looked about the same.
He looked good last week.
I think he had a good game.
He's the league in passing.
He's a little like Eli Manning right now, where he's less fun to watch, but he's more effective. A lot of just dink and dunk, short passes.
That works.
There was a bomb to Julio Jones. There was a bomb to
works, bro.
Yeah,
Austin Hooper.
They fought to stay in that game.
Anyway, Falcons at Saints, NFC South again. Once again, Mark, those 0-2 teams that aren't necessarily terrible at home. I like them in these types of games where they need to have it, got to have it, and I think they will. I think the Saints take this one. Greg, you disagree?
No, I don't, and this is an emotional game for the Saints. I was wondering, why is this on Monday Night Football? And
in general, what had the schedule makers been thinking?
That was a rhetorical question. He's now going to lay it on.
I'm going to answer.
Mr. King of New Orleans.
It's the 10-year anniversary of the return to the Superdome. Of course, the famous Steve Gleason punt return block. So we'll hear a lot about
that. I thought you were
going to
say the famous U2 Green Day pregame duet.
That too.
As well. Everyone should see that movie, Gleason, by the way. Incredible when it comes out on Amazon. I think it'll be on Amazon Prime fairly soon. This Saints team has not been that bad through 2 weeks. They're in that middle class of the NFL. They've lost two games by a combined 4 points. I thought their defense only giving up 9 points to the Giants.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Despite losing P.J. Williams, who's played well at cornerback during that game, was a great effort, but that's all it was. They're going to need great efforts because their roster's terrible. I mean, they lost their top three cornerbacks now off of what wasn't exactly a loaded defense.
I thought you can put David Johnson in his own tier right now among running backs with Adrian Peterson injured and Le'Veon Bell suspended. Devontae Freeman was the second most impressive running back I saw last week.
Wow.
He looked excellent against the Raiders. Quick, decisive, hitting the holes hard. They need to quit jerking around. I know Tevin Coleman has strengths of his own and he's playing well, but you got to let Devontae Freeman feed that hot hand.
I feel like these two teams who are rivals, when they play each other, I don't know if it's a litmus, but it kind of gives you an indication where these two seasons are going. And Atlanta would love nothing more than to get a road division win, especially after they dropped one at home against the Bucks, and bury their rival Saints 0-3. This would tell you a little something about Atlanta if they can go into New Orleans in this tough spot and take this.
I hate to keep sounding negative about this matchup, but I don't trust either one of these teams.
Well, don't you trust both to score 30 points?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's what I mean, that's Saints football. Give up 30 points, score 30 points.
It's Falcons football too because they absolutely cannot rush the pass.
Yeah, they
for the 18th year in a row.
Right. Dan Quinn hasn't turned that
go
around.
Go sign OCU Mignore again, please.
And as excited as I was about the Saints offense going into the year,
you're so pissed off about this game.
This is the opposite of what I want to see on Monday Night Football.
What do you mean? It's not the best game.
It's in a dome.
It's better than the Sunday night game.
This matchup helped provide one of the great moments in Monday Night Football history. So you're gonna honor that.
In your opinion.
Please. All right. Give me a break.
Okay, guys.
Just no more throws to Brandon Coleman or Kobe Fleener in key spots. You're only as good as your worst key guys, and those two guys are killing the Saints offense.
Willie Snead didn't practice on Thursday. That's something to watch.
It's bad.
And also, this is a big week. You want something to look forward to, Mark? Big night for Sean McDonough. Shaky week two.
Yeah, that angle interests me because it is someone that is under a lot of pressure. Mike Tirico, you know, left that gig. I think the four of us just love the guy, and Sean McDonough, you're on the hot seat.
Three.
I think Sean McDonough's got – he comes from a – all right, Wes. Sean McDonough comes from a broadcasting family. You know, he's going to get it done. I think you're going to give him time.
I love
he's
Sean
gonna improve.
McDonough.
Sean McDonough's hey, been working
wasn't
for a long
Tirico
time.
2 weeks in.
Hey, take that silver spoon out of your mouth and call the game nice.
I don't think it's a silver spoon scenario.
You're underselling that family. That's
literally
sports royalty.
For 25
yes, it
years.
Is.
His brother's in a football – one brother's in a football front office. The other brother's a GM of the Suns. Yeah. That's a football fan.
Rooting for Sean.
Greg, let me just clarify. Sean McDonough is an accomplished broadcaster. He's been around forever. I'm just saying I've noticed a difference in the quality between Mike and Sean.
You would have said that about anyone.
Maybe, maybe
You've
not.
You've got a poster of Tirico above your bed.
It's actually a shrine in my closet. It's like, honey, we can't use this closet for anything else anymore.
She's like so excited about this entire marriage.
She's like, who? Mike Tirico, broadcaster. Bro.
Get on board, Emily.
All right. That's it for the...
Love to see you call your pregnant wife bro.
Good thing she doesn't listen. That is the Week 3 preview. Next time you hear from us, it will be our flagship show. Let's try to make it 3 weeks in a row. Again, Week 2, our highest downloaded show ever. Spread the word. Make this podcast so big that the shadowy league figures are ashamed of themselves.
Rate us on iTunes. Leave comments. That's helped us jack up in the rankings.
Make them feel shame.
I'd like to thank the NFL, our employers, for this room during the show is been about 114 degrees.
They're trying to
what
smoke us out of here.
This is a human experiment. End it.
And we're speaking of experimenting, Periscope. We will once again Periscope the Sunday night show live. So look for that right around kickoff of the Sunday night football game. That will be live. We'll do the first 45, 50 minutes hour of the show. Thank you, everyone. But until Sunday night, we keep rolling, guys. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and La Cid behind the glass. Till Sunday.